This show is brought to you by Onnit.com. Go to Onnit.com and use code word CHURCH to get 10% off all of the great optimization products like Alpha Brain, New Mood, StreamTech Immune, StreamTech Sport. It's code word CHURCH to get 10% off. Show is also brought to you by NailedItLife.com, also makers of Los Gumis Hermanos. For the premier vapor pen on the market, go to NailedItLife.com and use code word Joey Diaz to get 20% off. And the show is also brought to you by HitE6.com. Better tasting, longer lasting. The proof is in the vape. They have e-cigarettes and e-cigars for you in different levels of nicotine. If you're looking to quit smoking or if you just want a cool-ass e-cigar, this is a place to go. And Hit E-Cigs is running a 5-for-50 promotion where you get 5 e-cigs for $50 when you use Cobra Joey's Church.
Oh, shit. Once you hear the piano, it could be time to hang yourself. Or it could be the beginning of a beautiful fucking show. You know what I'm saying? The church of what's happening now, cocksuckers, in full effect. Ben Saunders, Lee Syatt. Keep kicking this motherfucker, Lee. This is old school for these cocksuckers. It's Monday, July the 6th. There's no more Chinese people around. They did their service for the year. That's it. Firecrackers in the new year. Oh, shit. Oh, shit. Here he comes. Oh, shit. Are you kidding me, Ben Saunders, or what?
Nah, man. Chilling. Loving his music.
Keep going, Lee. Keep going. It didn't get started yet. Keep going, Lee. This ain't even gotten warmed up. Oh, shit. Kick this motherfucker. It's Monday, cocksuckers. Oh, shit.
In the shuffling madness of the locomotive breath. Runs the all-time loser.
God damn it.
Wake
except
up.
For the fucking flute. This guy's a bad motherfucker.
You're not a flute fan?
No. When I saw him with the flute, I almost had a heart attack. What's happening, cocksuckers?
Well, we just took a 1,000 milligram brownie, so this is going to be a fun-ass show.
Oh, my God, this is going to be a good-ass Monday, baby. What's up, Ben Saunders?
Chilling, man. Just got done training.
It's a pleasure to have you here, my
brother. No, a pleasure to be here.
I remember having
you.
A conversation with you maybe 7 years ago in a hotel room with Joe about Jeet Kune Do and
jiu-jitsu.
You were just a young pup or something.
That was my second fight ever.
Was it?
Yeah, we were in UFC 87, John Fitch versus GSP, man.
Jesus Christ, you got a memory like a hawk, brother.
Yeah, dude, it was amazing. Like, when I met you guys, I was like, yo, what's
Minneapolis.
Up? Yes.
Minneapolis.
Yeah.
That's right. And we hooked up and we were giggling and telling stories. It's great to have you here. It's great that you're with Eddie.
Yes. The mastermind himself, man. You know, traveling across country just to get this work in.
And you're fighting in July.
Fighting July 25th in Chicago. UFC on Fox 16 event.
And I'll be in Chicago with you, just not at your venue. I'll be doing comedy at Zany's.
Are you doing? I know Joe's doing a show.
Joe's doing it. I'm doing it. We didn't
Night
have
of Wayne's,
the dates.
Right?
Yeah. I got this date, you know, a year ago when I got the movie and... Then the UFC came up with the date, and I was already stuck, so.
Yeah, it's a shame. You know, I would love to make it out there for it, but obviously I'm going to be recovering.
No. I would love
recovering,
to make,
you know?
I'd love to make it out for you, and I can't because I'm going to be on stage. But it's, how did you, get hooked up with Eddie?
Oh, man. I'm just a huge, huge fan of The Guard. You know, when I started JKD, I started with a striking background. Hoyce Gracie opened my eyes, obviously UFC 1 and the first early UFCs, you know, seeing someone tear it up off their back. I was under the, you know, impression if I want to get involved in this game, I want to keep it standing. People are going to want to take me down. I need to become a savage off my back. So, you know, I worked really hard, you know, lots of dedication to my guard work and his game. I'm very flexible. I'm very long for my weight class as well. You know, I have the build that I could probably, if I packed on the muscle, I could fight at any weight class above 170. But his take on the guard game just transitioned very well into what I was already doing. And more than anything, when you're in a fight, you don't want to get punched in the face. And this man's coming up with, you know, his own system and theories and ideas of how to not get punched in the face while also being effective offensively. I'm not a fan of defensive guard. You know, defensive guard works very well if we went old school MMA, no time limits. I'll let you tire yourself out. I can play the defensive guard. But even my defensive guard is more open guard. I'm not a fan of closed guard. And everything Eddie does is the only closed guard that I feel is effective is top closed guard, a high closed guard on their upper back, pulling them in, you know, making sure they can't posture and punch you in the face. And his entire system, you know, it just seemed like a no-brainer. I went on The Ultimate Fighter Season 6. I basically had no money, you know, going into that show. But when I got off the show and I made it to the UFC, my first thing that I did with the money that I got from being on the show was buy his book, Mastering the Rubber Guard. And I just did everything in my power to try to understand, you know, like I said, his system, his style, his methods.
It's crazy that, you know, what was the guy that died hiking?
I don't know.
He died of MMA. He was a UFC guy.
He wasn't hiking. Evan Tanner?
Evan Tanner, you know.
Yeah.
He was very much self-taught. I never understood how a guy could get a video series from somebody and just teach themselves.
Yeah, that's...
That is phenomenal to me. Like, I'd be scared. I wouldn't want to get into a bad habit. Like, there's people that have no... you know, they're in a little small town, and there's no jiu-jitsu for 3 or 4 hours, you know.
You had no jiu-jitsu background at all?
I mean, what you're talking is
what we're talking about, what he did. He just went and got the DVDs.
That's what I'm saying. He got the DVDs with no background.
No, he had a background. At that time, but...
okay.
But realistically, that's exactly how I did it. I taught myself training with my friends and my brother pretty much from watching UFC, the early UFC VHS tapes. Once the internet kicked in, man, that was like, I mean, I was a computer nerd. I was all about it, you know, and you're hearing that dial-up, you know, AOL, you name it, all that stuff.
I miss that noise sometimes.
Yeah, just to get the information, man, like, I would print out anything I could find. Jiu-jitsu, philosophies, techniques. Sometimes it was pictures. Sometimes it was just articles. I print out everything I could. Anytime I could get any form of information, I was all on it, man. I mean, since 10 years old, I saw the first UFC live on pay-per-view. Changed my life. Changed my life. I knew from that moment, I looked at my best friend and said, that's what I want to do. And he said, you are crazy. Yeah, right. And I said, watch me.
And you're in Orlando, Florida.
I am now.
No, but at this time.
At the time, no. I grew up in Fort Lauderdale.
Fort Lauderdale.
And then I eventually moved to Coral Springs. But yeah, basically down south Florida.
And you're down there and you're watching all this. Now, what made you, what's the matter?
Someone just sent pizza to that guy.
Did they? Perfect.
Keep going, I'm sorry.
So what made you walk into a Jeet Kune Do studio? I'm sorry.
Honestly, there was nothing around but Taekwondo and karate schools where I was from. I got into Bruce Lee through my older brother, who was all about it. And it kind of, I ended up getting like Tao of Jeet Kune Do, which is like his main book
right.
And my best friend had all his other books. And with my ADHD, I'm not the biggest fan of reading, at least at the time growing up. You know, I'm young. I started getting into this when I was like 7-8 years old. So I'm like extremely young. So I'm just like, yo, show me the pictures. Like, I want the graphs showing me he's doing this to that to that to that. Let's put it together and see if we can make this happen. You know, you try to pretend you're doing kung fu and all that stuff, but it almost seemed like fate, because the only thing around was my best friend did Taekwondo. I didn't really, you know, my parents were divorced. I grew up with no money. So it's not like my dad could really pay for Taekwondo or karate or anything for me. So it'd be like my best friend would go train and then I would just kind of spar, play with him like when he would get back from it. And We were walking through the mall when I was 14, and there was literally a Jeet Kune Do, like a table set up. They're showing Dan and Asano doing Filipino Kali, knife fighting, stick fighting, and I already knew what all of this was from the books and from magazines, Black Belt Magazine and all that stuff, that I was just like, I literally told myself, we looked at each other, we're like, this is a sign from God, you know, like... We went there. We listened to what they had to say. I didn't even care what he was saying. His name was Sifu Neil Khalif. He still has an academy, American Dragon Martial Arts Academy in Coral Springs, Florida. So anybody looking to train JKD or weapons fighting or whatnot, I would definitely recommend that spot. And that was my original. I was like, how much does it cost? Doesn't matter. I'll figure it out. And I went and I asked my mom. I didn't live with my mom at the time, but I explained to her. I was like, Mom, I gotta go here. What can I do? And she's like, well, let's see if we can get you a job. And we went to a local McDonald's that was near where my dad lived. And she went in and she talked to the manager. And they had child labor laws at the time. So it was like, you can only work like 2 hours and you would have to take 15 minutes or 30 minutes off and whatnot. I could only work weekends. But I didn't care. Like, I killed myself on the weekends to do whatever I could to make that money to pay for these JKD lessons. And that was my official foundation. Everything else was self-taught. Even when I was going there, it was self-taught because I, you know, there wasn't jiu-jitsu there and whatnot. And I had to kind of, you know, I was just learning fundamentals. I was learning a little Wing Chun, a little Muay Thai, Filipino Kali, you name it, man. And my life kind of exploded from there.
How long did you stay at Jeet Kune Do for?
I stayed there for 2.5 years. So I was 14. I stayed there almost till I was 17. But I wasn't – I hated school. I really hated school. I knew what I wanted to do with my life. I knew – I mean, and at this time, UFC was banned from pay-per-view. It was banned from TV. So I'm like, okay – so that route might not be practical, but going to Japan, going overseas still is. Pride was at an all-time high. Okay. And so I'm like, that's still my goal. I'm like, worst case scenario, I'm going to open up my own martial arts academy. I'm just going to live the martial arts. I am so down with the mediocre. Even if I had to live at my gym, I didn't care. I was like, that's what my mindset. Let's just live the martial arts lifestyle. And crazy how things blew up the way it is now, obviously. But I stayed there for that long, and then I had to go into night school, and I had to do – I slept in every class freshman year. Freshman year, literally, I would come in. I'd probably play video games and stuff, play around with computers and whatnot all night, go to sleep for like 4 hours, wake up, go to school, and then sleep throughout school and do this over and over. My GPA freshman year dropped to a 0.8. You know, come junior year, they're like, you're not going to graduate. You need a 2.0. You're not going to graduate. I was like, obviously, my dad was like, if you don't pick your grades up before that, like freshman year towards the end, when he was like, are you joking me? You failed all these classes and D's, and the only ones that I did good in are the ones I enjoyed. Art, you know, like art stuff. And I ended up going to have to go to night school and all that and do whatever I had to do to make sure that I could graduate. And otherwise, he wasn't going to let me, you know, continue the classes. So, you know, I picked my grades up. But once the night school started happening, kind of took, I don't know. I wouldn't say I got just life in general, man. Life happened. And as far as working, you know, what academy owner is going to look at, you know, a 16, 17 year old boy and be like, no, I see a lot of potential in you. Clean my toilets and, you know, I'll let you train here for free. It really was, you know, business is business. So, you know, I didn't have the money to pay for the classes, and I kind of bowed out of the JKD for about a year. And then, but the entire time I was still training. I was still doing everything I said. I was printing out articles, you know. Anytime I had, I even remember I had it was like social studies or something, and we had to do different eras. And our era ended up being 2000. And they gave me sports. like we had a group project, so everyone had different sections, and they gave me sports. So I'm like, okay, yeah, cool, I'll do sports. I wasn't really into sports too much. You know, I was a little into football, but martial arts was my thing. So I had like little blocks for every other sport, and then UFC was like the biggest thing. I had the most hardcore pictures that I could print out, and I made a VHS tape literally with two VCRs. I found the most hardcore fights, and I put the parental advisory up to make sure that everyone in the class knew what they were about to see, let the teacher knew what she was about to see, and we're talking Tank Abbott, Bloodbath stuff, the Tale of Two... No, I forget who he fought. The guy that he ended up making, like... stone up where his arms got locked up, and then he makes fun of him for having his arms locked up. Like, it was just the most vicious. I believe it was Gerard Gordeaux kicking out the tooth and punching the eye of Taylor Tooley from the first UFC. Like, the most brutal stuff I could find. And by the end of it, everyone thought I was absolutely psychotic. Something was wrong with me, and the teacher was
scared.
Yes. She wasn't. I mean, she was probably a little annoyed by it. She luckily, my brother and sister, my older sister, and I actually have a twin brother. We're fraternal. He's the complete opposite. He's a huge pacifist, at least physical pacifist. He went the political route, so he's a verbal aggressor, I guess. But yeah, all the teachers liked them, so I was kind of like the oddling out, you know, the black sheep of the family. And so she accepted it, but ever since that moment, it definitely scared the crap out of most of the people in my grade. It was messed up.
Yeah. Now, when did you get on The Ultimate Fighter? How old were you when you got on that? Which was 6 or 7 years ago, correct?
Yeah, I just turned 24.
Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I was 4-0-2. I just won the CFC Combat Fighting Championships welterweight title. And my first two fights were draws, fight of the night. But there were AFC old school. Dan Lambert from ATT was, you know, it was actually amazing. The old school show AFC, you know, he actually brought, you'll see a lot of people from there. Hermes Franca and various people he brought from Brazil. I fought a guy from Argentina. You know, he really made it an international show. And that was kind of my breakthrough.
How did both of your first fights become draws?
Yeah, they were only two round fights. And I watch the fights, and still to this day, I watch the fights, and I feel, depending on the judging criteria, I feel I won them, you know, but I'll give it a draw. It's cool, you know. First fight, I actually knocked my dude out and then woke him back up. When I hit him on the ground, he gave his back, and then for 3 minutes, I'm just squeezing his heart. I took the fight on 3 days' notice because, like, three other people dropped out from fighting him. Dean Thomas gave my name to the matchmaker, and they called me up, and I just remember squeezing for a rear naked choke for 3 minutes, and then the round ends, and I'm like, oh man, lactic acid buildup in my arms. I was like, I can't even lift my arms. I gotta go out there for 5 more minutes. Okay, so that was all heart. I remember after that round, I ended up getting the takedown at the end. He kind of teed off on me. He was a Muay Thai dude. You know, he was an ISK kickboxing champion. He came out with the Tung Po headgear, you know, big diesel black guy. I had my family there. They're like, shut up. He's fighting him. This guy's fighting him. I was 21. He was 31. And he was like, I'm fighting a grown-ass man, you know, with experience. And, you know, I got a takedown at the end. I had side mount. He was trying to get a guillotine with side mount. You can't finish a choke from there. The round ended and the crowd's going crazy. It was just a battle. We were going at it for the entire time. I had the advantage the first round, second round. I'm taking everything he has, but I didn't quit. I kept fighting back. I thought he knocked my front teeth out, and I'm thinking to myself, oh, you gotta return the favor. I'm here getting $300 for this. Oh, I'm definitely gonna knock his teeth out. I gotta try to knock his teeth out because they ain't. I don't have dental insurance, man. I don't even know how I'm gonna get this covered. Yeah, and the entire crowd screaming, one more round, one more. Like, the entire place is going crazy. I walk to my corner. I'm like, oh, my God. Do I really got to go out there for one more round? And they're like, no, your contract, it only said two rounds. I'm like, thank God. Thank God. And it ended up being a draw. And
those little young leagues are where you really learn how to battle. I mean, think about it. You're training all your life, and all of a sudden, you get to this tournament, you think it's going to all be coaching. You look across, and there's a 31-year-old guy across from you, 10 years your elder. And you're like, Jesus Christ, this ain't as glamorous as I thought it would be. I got to fight this fucking monster.
I actually didn't care. I actually had a smile on my face. I'm like, I was so excited. I was so excited. I was like, oh, my God. I get to finally go pro. Yeah. Like, no amateur crap. We're going straight pro. I'm getting paid for this. This is going to be on my official record. I'm going to be on Sure Dog. You know, like, people are going to be able to look me up. I was so excited. I didn't even care. And then I'll say this, though. After the fight, the worst thing that I did was I was probably concussed, too, a little bit. And we were like, yeah, let's go to my friend's house. We'll drink some beers. And he's got a hot tub. And that was probably the worst thing I could have done. I dehydrated myself with alcohol, went into a hot tub, dehydrated myself even more. And then woke up the next day feeling like absolute trash. And from that day forward, man, I don't really like to drink after a fight, you know. I don't think it's good for the brain. I don't think it's good for vitality, you know. You're already cutting the weight. You're already going through the fight. There's so much your body just went through physically, mentally, emotionally.
It's in shock.
Yeah.
It's in shock. And then you're going to get punched in the head.
And then you're going to give it alcohol or drugs. Yeah. I learned.
You're an open wound. You know,
from that day forward, I was like, nah, the longevity and vitality of my body. You know, maybe 3 days. Let me come home, relax, have a good night's sleep, you know.
I was always wondering, and I know it's going to be different for every fighter, but I can't imagine going from fighting in front of 60,000 people to going home and watching Seinfeld reruns. Like, what is, like, a normal...
That's me, man.
Oh, my God. That sounds like...
Let me just go away for a little bit. Let my body just... Give my body 3-4 days to just... Take it back, you know. Sometimes, you know, you can go out there and have the greatest fight in the world. You take no punishment, no, you know. You still had to cut weight. You still had to make weight. That's the only real trauma that happened. And maybe, you know, anything that happened throughout the training camp leading into the fight. But, you know, you had the good times. You got the bad times. But I'll agree with you on one factor, and that was I could have went out there and I dropped him in the first minute and a half. It could have been over. And, yeah, I would have got a W. But, man, to know what it's like to just be in there and be in the grind and have – you'll find out real quick, do you have the heart for this? Because I had no cardio going into that second round, you know. And when I thought he knocked my teeth out, you know, I there were so many times that I probably could have just caved down – you know, gave up, tapped out, you know, give them something, whatever. And, you know, that's definitely a defining moment in anybody's career is you can go out there all day long and knock people out, submit people real quick. When you start dealing with, you know, perseverance, when you have to deal with the struggle and trying to come back or trying to maintain, that's a defining moment to kind of let you know what kind of person you are or what you're trying to strive for. You can always get better. You could always, oh man, I wasn't ready. You tapped out and then say, that'll never happen again. I'm going to make sure I'm in shape every time. And then, you know, obviously you can gain, you know, a little bit more ambition to have more heart later on if that's your thing. But the greatest thing that ever happened to me was my first two fights were draws. I learned everything you would learn from a loss without getting a loss on my record. And I think for sure that's kind of gave me the motivation and the understanding of I can do this, man. I can actually do this. I just got to get my bearings down, you know. I got to understand. We had no clue back then, you know. This 2004. had no clue how to fight for, how to train for a fight, how to get in, you know, proper conditioning for a fight. I was just going to classes sometimes, you know, and then we were, and then we would have pro class, and it was just fighting each other, you know, like that's how most people came up. When I came up before, when I moved to Orlando, we went to Dean Thomas's place. It was United Champions. It was Jamie Levine, Dean Thomas, Mike Bell, Mike Black, and Paul Rodriguez were the main guys. But we had people from here, California, Raw, coming out here, the old school Raw team. I don't know if they're around still, but, you know, like people that I saw on, like, on videos, you know, Gladiator Challenge and King of the Cage and stuff coming through those doors. And we would just throw down. And I'm this, at this time, I'm 18. I'm a little baby, you know, and I'm just trying to get, trying to understand the game. I was always, I think the biggest thing is, fuck, keep your ego at the damn door, man. Tap as much as you have to, and, you know, think about the longevity. You're not getting paid for that. There's no insurance. You break your hand, you're out fucking 3 months, 4 months of what? What are you learning at that point in time? You know, you're very limited in what you can and cannot do.
How does the fear play into this? Any fear along the way? I asked you because, you know, I had a little bout last week. And it's so weird that after 24 years of doing comedy, you always get... I love being scared. I revolve about around having fear. That's what brings the best out of me when I'm scared, you know, and... I think that a lot of, because of the UFC and because of a lot of other things, you know, when I was a kid, I joined karate at 8 or 7 and I loved it and I went to tournaments. And there was a time where, yeah, you know, there's Roberto Duran, I could do that. And then I got into a couple brawls as a kid and I did okay. I still didn't have any hope of being a fighter, but, you know, if that's the last straw, then I think I'll be a fighter if I really need the money. And then one day I went to mug a dude and I got beat up really bad. I got punched like 1,000 times. And I remember saying to myself the next day, putting the ice on my head, because he hit me everywhere. There was no fucking ref. There was no Mario
Fights.
There was no Mario Sakasaki,
and that's
whatever
for
his fucking
right
name
there.
Was.
You mugged him.
Yeah,
that's for his life.
He was hitting me with shots to the fucking head, the face, the any way he could connect. And I remember putting bag on my head the next day going, you know what, man? I learned a big lesson last night. Don't mug people, and you're never going to be a fighter. Like, this is never, ever going to work for you. Like, this is, not that I was scared. I just didn't like that whole 3 minutes of my life. That was just horrifying. He was all over me like a cheap suit.
And you might have thought, you know, yeah, God knows what he could have done.
God knows what he could have done. And I was on the way out, and I punched him. He had me cornered, and I punched him in the throat, and I ran out of there. But I knew I had like a block and a half on him. I ran fast. Like, yeah. I broke my own record.
Sparring is a lot different from a fight, I would imagine.
Listen, man, you can, you know, hitting the bag. You know, I see these guys, you know, I was going to this kickboxing place over here, and the reason why I stopped going was it was great, but they had too many guys in there that I would look at them and go, you're a fighter? Oh, no, I'm a fireman. Then why do you have this gear on? They had cologne on and the hair, and they're really going to fucking knock your head off. I'm 50. I'm just going in there to lose weight. I'm not going to knock nobody out. These guys are in there to knock you out, and you're like, I feel bad for you because you're actually going to go up to a fighter someday, and he's going to hit you with 6 shots to the fucking head. You're beating up a 50-year-old, and you're over there putting with a mouthpiece. But me, you're a part-time fucking first-grade teacher. I mean, you get a lot of those guys.
That's the ego.
They don't know. They've never been lit up. They never give somebody a finger in a car. That's the quickest way to know if you're a tough guy. Give somebody a finger in a car and watch them come out of the car. And I saw it 1,000 times. People get lit up by some guy who's having a fucking horrible day, and you think you're cute, and you give him a fucking finger. And this guy, you know, getting lit up is scary, but at the same time, it does something to your heart. It tests you. You said it. It tests you, man. And this is anything. I always tell people, you know, how many people go to college and get a degree in some fuck and come out, and after 3 months, they're like, this ain't for me. Yeah. You never got a summer job doing it. I think before you become a fighter, you should go somewhere and get punched in the head. Try to mug somebody. Go to a bar. You know, tell 3 black guys, call them a racial slur, and see if this is for you. You know, something. Yeah, I mean, fighting is, you know, you and I were talking at the protein shake about how many stars have to be aligned for a fight. you know, when people see, oh, Lee got a TV show, you know, how many stars have to be aligned? You know, Johnny Hendrix beat, and I'm just using this, guys, Johnny Hendrix beats somebody in a fight, you know. He's a great athlete. He was a college wrestler. He came a long way. But all the stars have to align. Your kickboxing coach has to get in, has to be on the same track as your wrestling coach, as your jiu-jitsu coach, as your conditioning coach. There's always one guy that wants to take over or something, and that ruins it. Now you have that doubt in your head going into a fight. People have no idea what goes into winning. People really have no idea what goes into fighting. They just watch you guys once every 60 days, you know, and they're like, oh, this must be easy. They have no idea that you have to train three disciplines, plus the conditioning. Plus, God forbid you have a baby and you can't sleep 8 hours. And there's so many things that go into a fight. It's not, you know, when I was a kid and I see this guy get on stage and talk David Brenner or George Carlin, whatever his fucking name is, I thought that on the way there, he just wrote this shit in the car. Like, that's what I really thought, guys. Like, honest to God, before I got into stand-up, I thought that you got a call, like, at 7. What are you doing, Ben? Nothing. This is Joey at the Comedy Club. Come on down at 9:30. CBS is here. We got some cameras. And on the way down, that's what I fucking thought. So if that's what I fucking think about stand-up, what is the common Joe somewhere that does, you know? I thought that George Carlin on the way said, let me just write 45 minutes. And you went up there. And the first time I went up there, I just talked. Boy, do you get a fucking, you learn quick. But that first experience lets you know whether you're going to do this again or you're not going to do this again. Yeah. Some people do it for peer pressure. You know, your friends went to the fight, or you could do it. Meanwhile, they're like, dog, he's going to get his ass kicked again. You know, and or you do it because you have balls and you go, you know what? I want to overcome this loss. I really want to get into fighting. Or, you know, when I, like I said, when I got into stand-up, I had no idea what went into stand-up. And I know most people don't. I as I watched the UFC and I asked more questions, I have a blatant idea of what goes into fighting and what goes into winning. It's two different worlds. What goes into fighting and what goes into winning is two different fucking categories. And then what goes to winning a championship is a complete different fucking level. That's when you're, you know, think about that. You know, you could be a fighter, 5-6, you retire. They put you in fucking the funny, what is it, the Fat Farm Muscle Protein Hall of Fame, whatever, you know. But winning, fighting, and winning at a championship level has to be.
Or even breaking the top 10. You know, even breaking the top 10.
You see Ronda Rousey. She's whatever. What is she in the UFC, 6-0?
Somewhere like
yeah,
that.
But when she's, when she's 3-0, she's still walking down the fucking thing with the twins, with the dude that trains Pacquiao, with the, you know, champions never seem, now you have money as a champion. Hopefully if Nike lifts the rock and everybody, now you have money. You could take a flight whenever the fuck you want and train with Pacquiao's fighter. You could go to Eddie Bravo. You could go to, you know, when you're a champ, a lot of people say, well, I'm a champion. I'm just going to fucking party now. No, you got to work even harder now. Now your shit's got to be even tighter, because now they're coming to take your fucking head off. And if it's not, you know, look at the 155 division when this kid got hurt last week. How many people raised their hand? Yeah. You got four people always looking to tear your fucking head off when you're the champion.
You talking about the Conor?
Yeah, when Conor, when he needed 45. To fight last week at 145. How many people lifted their fucking hand last week? Everybody, even fucking Chael Sonnen. Even Chael Sonnen said, fuck it, I'm off the juice. I'm ready. I'll drop down to 145.
Let's make it happen.
It's just really, it really is a weird how people's conception of fighters or acting or anything, to take it to that level, you have to be at a complete fucking, look at this fucking, when GSP was winning, where didn't that motherfucker go? He would go to England with the Gracie, the really good jiu-jitsu guy, the tall one, what's his name, Hodja?
Yeah.
The really tall guy, the real methodical guy.
He gets everybody. He sticks with it too, man. I mean, if he works his stand up and sticks with it, God,
who Hodja?
Yeah.
Oh my God, you know he's out of the UFC now.
I know, yeah, but he could still stick with it, man.
Well, listen, if I was Hodja Gracie, I just jujitsu motherfuckers the rest of my life. I love that guy. I love watching his jujitsu league because he don't do much. He doesn't do much. He passes your guard. He hangs out for a little while. Then he mounts you. Then he play, and he goes for that same choke. What's the choke? He gets Ezekiel or something. He gets the same choke every time. And you know it's coming. You could start with holding your collar, and he's still going to fucking get it. It don't matter. And he takes his time. He puts his leg over you, and he passes your guard real simply. But the whole time, he's grinding you the fuck out. He's grinding you out, man. It's very methodical, you know? It's. I love that chess game. I love the jiu-jitsu chess game. And I'm just starting to see it now. For the first 2 years, all I was doing was breathing on the bottom. That's it. I just went to jiu-jitsu to pull guard and let you beat me up. Yeah. I just wanted to be on the bottom and learn to survive on the bottom, because I, too, went to lunch with Eddie Bravo about 6 years ago. And he was fucking higher than fuck one afternoon. We went to get barbecue, and he gave me a ferocious ear-beating about the future of the UFC, that if you couldn't fight on your back, you were going to get killed in the future. Because wrestlers don't like being on their back, so they're going to always throw you on your back. And if you don't know how to attack, and I saw the back game develop in the UFC. After he said it to me, he didn't even tell nobody else. It was just me and him. I was just a fat fuck stoned. I didn't even want to go to jiu-jitsu then. I just enjoyed seeing the different technical areas of jiu-jitsu. I knew that. I knew it was a chess game. This wasn't no physical game, jiu-jitsu. When you really see it, the high-level guys, they're not even exerting themselves. They're just throwing their arms around. It's like watching. I went to a fucking clinic. I went to a Higa Machado clinic, and Dan Inosanto was standing next to me at the Higa Machado clinic. You know, bro, I had tears in my eyes for 20 minutes. But here I am, 350 fucking pounds, 340, and I tried to do everything Dan did because he was 70 years old. Lee, he's 70. If he could do it, I got to do it. So when they did the neck rolls, I had to do it. Even if I felt my choking myself, I almost killed myself. He called me that day. He goes, hey, can you do the back rolls? I said, no. And I didn't tell him why. I didn't tell you no. I just said no.
Yeah, you just
said
no. I didn't
tell you because I almost suicided myself. I almost Robin Williams myself in one of those fucking rolls. I almost broke my own fucking shoulder. Man. But then when I saw Dan Inosanto next to me, are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? I had to do everything he was doing. The Hegan fucking trap. I was doing everything just because Dan was next to me, you know, and I didn't even ask him nothing. I didn't even get to that part about asking about Bruce Lee or Jeet Kune Do, you know. I did an Arliss once with James Coburn. He was one of Bruce Lee's students, and I kind of picked his brain a little bit. He started crying, too. And once he started crying, I started crying, everybody was fucking crying. You know, I had to smoke a joint just to come back from the misery. What's up, Lee Syatt? That 500 milligrams hitting you yet?
Yeah, it's hitting me pretty hard.
Good, good, good. What do you got planned for later? You got some pastrami at the house? What do you got?
I don't know what I'm going to have to eat.
You got pepperoni? What do you got?
I do have pepperoni.
You got any Mexican food left over from the wife and the
mom? No.
How was the barbecue?
Oh, it was great.
Talk to me. How was it? What did you eat? What did your mom cook at the park?
She cooked shrimp.
At the park?
Yeah, at the park.
Listen to this. The in-laws at the park.
Shrimp kebabs, carne asada. They had the rice already, and then the guacamole. And then carne asada, and then not linguica, but it was like, I called you and asked you, but it's like lingacoa, or it's like kind of like, what's the Mexican sausage?
I have no idea.
Do you know what I'm talking about? Like, you have it with your eggs.
Chorizo.
Yeah, it's kind of like chorizo.
Good shit.
So, yeah, we had that. And then I thought of you. This dad came in like halfway with his like 10-year-old son, and they were like, we got ice cream. Like $3 an ice cream cone. I was like, fuck yeah, and I bought everyone ice cream, and I was just like, of course they're out, like, making. I could just see you doing it, just like if you had to, like, selling ice cream.
Sure, why not? Yeah. You know, no shame in selling ice cream on the 4th of July. The people out there sweating their asses off. He probably made a small 200.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, he probably just made a
small. He was selling it for $3 each cone in the box, even if you bought it at Ralph's, is $6 for four. So, yeah, he was making a ton of money. He was doubling his money.
Fucking, that's what Mexicans
do. There you go.
That's American ingenuity. That's something this country has forgotten.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to be embarrassed and sell ice cream at the 4th of July. Meanwhile, he deposited $1.50 in his bank account. He's got 50 for reefer. Who's better than that fucking Mexican? You see what I'm saying?
People are monsters, though. Like, people, you should have seen it. People, we got there at like 11 a.m., and people were like roping off areas. They were tying off and saving parking spaces. They, like, I've never seen people be, like, so selfish. It was just weird.
No class. But what are you going to do? It's the 4th of July. They're saving, you know, they have no place to do it themselves. Hey, man, listen.
It was fun at the park.
It's fun. It's fucking fun.
It was really cool.
It's cool. You know, it wasn't that hot on the 4th of July. What'd you do for the 4th?
It was the greatest drives I've ever had out here. It was like ghost town. You know?
Yes, yes, it was easy. Nothing.
Yeah, I could get what would normally take me 45 minutes. I did in 15, 20 minutes. It was great.
That's
I
nice.
Trained.
That's nice that you're doing like little part-time training camps here.
Yeah, yeah.
This has to be. Like, if I was a fighter, this would have to be the ideal place. Like, this would just be, I would go to Justin Fortune's for boxing. I would go to Higa Machado for jiu-jitsu. I would go up here and wrestle. There's some wrestling club up here that they have, like, some college that goes up here and wrestles. And somebody from my jiu-jitsu school went there, and he goes, they killed me the first 30 days. You know, there's no harder workout than wrestling. I was thinking of locomotive breath. That was, I used to play basketball, and I could hear the wrestlers going up and down the stairs. And they would run up and down the stairs to locomotive breath, frontward, backwards. You know, that fucking Tabaccino guy, that was his name. Tabaccino was the coach. He'd make them run those four flights 1,000 fucking times. And they always said that. So the problem with the training camps here is that everything's so fucking far. So in the sitting, you get tight all over again. You know, everything's like so far apart, you know, unless like you had one for 2 hours. I like Justin. He fought, what's his name? He's a heavyweight fighter. He's Pacquiao's training conditioning coach. Mm. He was Pacquiao's original guy all those years. And then he opened up his own gym, and him and Freddie fought. So now he's back with Pacquiao. Nice. But I would go over there. That's a fucking, he's a savage, that dude. And he's Australian. He throws everybody out of that dog. I've seen him say some wild shit to people. And he could back it with a torn bicep. He's got one big one and one that's like my fucking, my little pinky toe. That's how his bicep.
Yeah, Matt Serra's got a torn bicep too. He'll
fuck you up, Justin.
Yeah.
Fuck you up, Justin Fortune. Go to Justin Fortune's gym. He's on Sunset Boulevard between Curson and very sweet man. Go down there and go fuck around with him, boy. He has a Saturday class for like just Gentiles, where they come in and run with wheelbarrows and tires. You know, guys who see it on TV and they're like, I could do this. Fuck John Jones. You know what I'm saying? And he just breaks them right there. He just breaks them. He beats them up with that one good arm and it's all over.
Oh, boy. Man. And with the one good arm.
With the one good arm. Like my shop teacher, Mr. Panacucci. He lost the arm in Vietnam. When that motherfucker would elbow you with that fucking dead Vietnam arm, oh, my God, you would go flying through. You think I'm kidding you? He had it that he would poke you with this in the rib.
For what?
Like, if you fucked with him.
Right?
Like
right? You, for
you,
what?
But I went to school in the 80s where they still bitch-slapped the motherfucking jersey.
True.
You know, he would poke you, or he lost, like, from here down, and he would poke you like a Quan Su to the fucking, right, to this rib. Oh, my God. And he would stick, like, his finger, like his little stub from his elbow and your little rib there. Oh, my God. That was painful.
That's fucked up. Hitting that cartilage right in between.
Yeah,
right.
Oh, my God. And he would knock the fucking air out of you. Those little old guys with a missing hand. They'll fuck you up like Han. Remember when Han fought John Saxon? He fucked up Robert Kelly. Han, the guy on the fucking island on Enter the Dragon.
Yes.
He only had one hand.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He fucked up the black dude. I'm telling you right now. So then, Doug, what really impressed the fuck out of me is that your dream never stopped.
Perseverance,
you
know, man.
You went out of the UFC for a few years, maybe a year and a half or two.
Four years.
And you came right back like a soldier and started bit-slapping motherfuckers.
I didn't stop, man.
And you're never supposed to stop. That's why you're here, Ben Saunders, because I love that. You know, you went out. And I still followed you. I asked Joe if he had seen you and shit. And then I know you called Eddie. Eddie said you called him one day. He goes, you're not going to believe you called me, Ben Saunders. And I go, that's funny, because there's something to you. Like, Ben Saunders is like Carlos Condit in a lot of ways. You know, there's people who are fighters. I would hate to bump into Ben Saunders in an alley one night when you're in a bad mood, because it ain't going to end. You know what I'm saying? There's people that it might not end if you're having a bad day. It might not ever end. Carlos Condit, it might not ever end. He might punch you to fucking death, Carlos Condit. When he gets in his zone, look at him. His head even changes. His head gets pointy. When he starts fighting, his whole head changes. It's amazing, man. Fighting is, like I said, it's a fucking death thing. It ain't for me. You know what I'm saying? I got like two good punches and a sidekick. Then I get in my car. That's all I got. We're going to have to go beat up that T-shirt guy now. You understand me?
No. Brought to you by Corova Edibles.
We're going to have to go down there and karate chop this fucking...
No, I'm just talking about like Carlos Condit's head getting pointier. Oh, my God. No, people are getting crazy on Twitter.
Why?
Because like one guy was like, he was threatening a lawsuit on me. The other guy ordered him a bunch of pizzas.
Fuck them. This is how we do it. You want to fuck with Lee Syatt?
Dude, these are fucking strong as shit.
That's what they're supposed to do.
1,000 milligrams. So they tasted pretty good, though.
Now, after you won, where'd you go? Bellator.
Yeah.
You went to Bellator. And after you won, did they contact you or you contacted them? So,
for what, UFC?
To come back to the UFC.
I fulfilled my contract with Bellator. I didn't want to re-sign with them. My whole purpose of even going there, I didn't even think it was going to take that long, man. But, you know, you sign a contract, you got to fulfill it. So I did what I had to do. I grinded through my contract, got done with my last one. Didn't want to re-sign. They knew that I wanted to go back. That was really out of pride alone, man. I kind of promised myself when I got cut from the UFC, I was like, I'm going to do everything I can to get back here. That's my goal in life. If I don't make it back there, it doesn't matter how good I could do at Bellator. If I don't make it back, then basically I lied to myself, you know? I committed to something, and if I don't accomplish that, doesn't matter how good I am or what I do, I just, it felt like a loss to me. And I was actually supposed to fight Matt Riddle for the Titan FC welterweight title. I don't know if he broke his ankle. He did something to his ankle like 2-3 weeks before the fight, and at the same time, like I read on, I always, you know, go on Underground, UG, Bloody Elbow, MMA Mania, you name it, MMA Junkie. I saw someone got injured where the hell did I fight? Wherever I got the Umaplata, I forget. I forget where it was, but
it was in Tulsa.
Tulsa, there we go. Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Yeah, I watched the fight last night. I just started jiu-jitsu, and it's pretty crazy. Like, the coolest thing for me was doing something on class, and then the guy I was wrestling jiu-jitsuing with did it to me. I was like, whoa. So when I watched you do the Omoplata, I was like, how many hours did you spend just doing that?
Many.
Because it just seemed like you just rolled right into it. Because it blew my mind when someone did the move we were doing in class. I was like, whoa. Like, it actually, because it's a lot different just working through the move.
When you train it, drill it, but then getting it in a practical situation, in a live situation is a totally different experience. But, the Umaplata is just one of my go-tos. I was playing with it a lot, even when I was out in Bellator. I mean, when I got let go from the UFC, it was pretty much like, hey, you know, at the time, the UFC is overrun with really high caliber wrestlers, and you either got to step your jiu-jitsu game up, you got to step your takedown defense up, or something. You know, my striking was always good, and or that was never the issue that, you know, Joe Silva said I needed to work on, and I completely agreed. Because at the end of the day, man, I'm a martial artist. I'm going to learn till I die. You know, I'm going to keep evolving. You got to evolve or it's going to pass you by. There's always new things that come into play. And whether you use it or not, you need to have it in your brain, in your arsenal, so you can at least defend against it. Or if you're coaching, you can see it happening so you can coach your person against it and all that stuff. But the way I got back in the UFC was pretty much I was supposed to fight for the welterweight title against Matt Riddle. He got injured. I saw MMA Junkie. Someone got injured in my weight class for the Tulsa show, and I immediately text Joe Silva and was like, yo, what's up, Joe? You know, I read you might need a replacement. And he was like, go fight Matt Riddle first, and we'll talk after. And I was like, well, unfortunately, you know, he's injured. And, you know, it was supposed to be a 5-round fight. No one wanted to take the fight on short notice, 2-3 weeks notice against me. And, you know, I feel everybody on that, too, because you're dealing with a weight cut. You're dealing with a lot of rounds of cardio, and I'm not the, you know, easiest person to take a matchup like that, you know. Because if I'm not putting you away with a submission, there's a good chance that I'm trying to obliterate your face and body. So, you know, there's a lot of pain that could potentially be there. And Joe Silva, I told him the situation, and he ended up the next morning. I wake up and he's like, if you can talk to Titan FC and they're cool with you coming over, let's do it. And I was like, oh shit, fuck yeah. Like, it, right there I was just like, Now I gotta see if I can work this out with Titan. And Titan was cool as fuck. As people can see now, Titan's about to be on Fight Pass, UFC Fight Pass. They worked a deal out with the UFC, so their shows are going to be live on there. And, yeah, man, they let me go. Joe Silva called me up, Joe Silva set me up, and we signed a contract. And just like that, man, I was back in the game. It was crazy. It was absolutely nuts. And what's crazier, even more so, is when you brought up fear, and then you brought up your street fighting situations, I would have to say that for sure. I'm not a bully. I was like the anti-bully. Like, you ain't going to fuck with me, my friends, my brother, or anybody. Like, you jock motherfuckers, like, those motherfuckers, not all of them, but there's a lot of jocks that are fucking bullies, man, and they think picking on the weak is either fun, or they have this crazy psychological thought process of, well, I'm making them stronger for later in life. And I don't see it. I don't see that, because, you know, then you get the people that either just dwindle away and think they're nothing, or, man, sometimes they snap, right? They snap, and we've seen some other crazy things that I won't even mention on the show, but, yeah.
Because I'm stoned.
Yeah.
I only bullied one time. Two times. And when I say bully, it's not like I went up to somebody and mad dogged them. When I say bully, it's that I struck them, but I struck them in a felonious way. That's funny. One time I kicked a bum. One time we were mugging them. And you got to kick those motherfuckers. I kicked them in the leg. I can never kick nobody in the head or nothing. But then one time I went to rob Freddy.
Standards.
When we did the gas station, and he kept telling me, if you rob me, you got to make it seem like, you know, I got robbed. You got to tie me up and shit. And I could. He was my... It's like when I go to jiu-jitsu and I'm in side control. Listen, I look at myself in the mirror every day. I'm a fat fuck. I don't want me on me. So when I'm in side control, a lot of guys are like, Joey, you know, grab the fucking side arm, put your shoulder into my jaw. I don't like doing that to people. That's a bully. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Just me being on top of you, that's good enough for me. You could figure it out. You're a fucking brown belt. You know how to get me off you. You know what I'm saying? I'm a white belt. Figure it out. So that's the only two times I really went out of my way to bully somebody. And I felt, to this day, every time I think of robbing Freddie, like, I robbed him like 8 times in a year at the gas station. But I always brought somebody else to kick him because I liked Freddie. I found no satisfaction in kicking Freddie. There was no, you know what I'm saying? Freddie was a sweetheart that was half retarded. It wasn't his fault. You know, life just dealt him a fucked up deck of cards. He was a gas station attendant. He had a fat, fat wife. But he was a sweetheart. He did anything for me. Now he just wanted to do an 8-ball. So for him to do an 8-ball, I had to rob him and give him a kickback. And it was so bad that, you know, at the time, like, I kicked him in the chest, and he's like, harder. You know, I'm like, I can't kick you harder, Freddie. I didn't know even though if there were cameras out in those
did
days.
Did he say that under his breath? Like, harder.
Yeah, and I felt bad. So I always had to give somebody 200 just because I felt guilty kicking Freddie. I think about that. When I rewrote that, like, I was just writing about things I used to do. And I even narrowed it. Like, I had to think about things I did with certain people. And I hung out with this kid, Didi, for 2 or 3 years. And we used to do some crazy... We were kids, 16, 15. Like, our big thing was to take 2 Quaaludes and drink a bottle of vodka. Like, we'd fucking down a bottle of poopa vodka apiece when we were 16. And I was an alcoholic. Like, I don't even like booze. Today, I don't even drink. I drink a shot of fucking Jaeger or something if I'm at a comedy club. But I can't even see myself drinking a bottle of Wolfschmidt anymore. Like, even close. Like, I haven't drank vodka and orange juice. It's got to be 25 years since I've had a vodka and fucking orange juice. But we were 16 in the wintertime. You know, you grew up on the East Coast in the wintertime, you got to get jizzed up every night when you're outside. An 8-pack of beer. I remember robbing a beer truck one time. No, we robbed Albertsons, and we took a fucking gallon of cooking wine, the red shit, and we drank it at the park. That's the worst headache you'll ever fucking get.
I don't think you're supposed to drink that one.
I know. I never drank wine again. Like, I take sips of wine. Like, if I say I've taken 3 sips of wine since I was 17, that's a lot. I don't like wine. I don't like it around me. That's why they killed Jesus. He had wine that night. You're supposed to have wine. That's when they always kill you. Castellano was drinking wine. He got shot. I don't fucking know what I'm talking about. That brownie fucked me up too, Lee. Oh, a little Tony Bennett to break things up here.
Oh my goodness.
What's oh my goodness?
This is brownie. I like. Just,
you're not going to jiu-jitsu tonight?
It's Monday.
Yeah, 8 o'clock. This league is waiting for you. Are you kidding me? I'd have a fucking panic attack if I went to jiu-jitsu. When somebody
breaks your heart. How many times have you done it?
What?
Jiu-jitsu.
Two years.
Straight or just 2 years off and on?
2 years straight. I had knee surgery, but I took off from August 24th, like the second week of October. The second week of October, I was back at Hegan's, and he had me doing little things. I didn't start rolling again till probably the beginning of December. Mm. At that time, Hegan took the month off, so I was just rolling one of his brown belts. And I really, really gotten... I went on jiu-jitsu.com where you write the technique you learn and when you go to class and taps, and you write so many little things. And ever since I started doing the complete thing...
Keep track of everything.
Yeah, it was new to me. I didn't wrestle in high school. I don't know nothing.
Yeah.
But you know what, man? I went from 418 to like 270, and I just hit the bag with a box. That's why I used to go to Justin's and Nakafoli's down there. If you ever watch Friday Night Fights... When that dude that doesn't Friday Night Fights, when he goes to, there's a part of the boxing thing where he breaks down a fight. He used to be Tyson's trainer. You know what I'm talking about?
No.
He used to be Tyson's trainer, not the old guy, the guy that replaced. Who's Tyson's trainer? Fucking really cool guy. I met him. They were trying to put him on a Spike show. So they were trying to look for co-hosts, and I had to go down there to a meeting, and I met with him. They never did the show, so.
Cust Almo?
Or no.
Teddy Atlas?
Teddy Atlas. Teddy Atlas is a really, really technical boxer. He's the one who had Tyson all those years.
Point, son.
He's a bad motherfucker. That's what the edibles do to him. He gets better. Yeah. And
whenever he teaches boxing. Around right there. You didn't fuck around.
Whenever he teaches boxing on Friday Night Fights on ESPN, he always goes, he'll always talk about your strengths and your weaknesses and Lee's strengths and his weaknesses and what you have to do to beat him. And what he has to do to beat you in that one time in that breakdown, he'll say, one thing I like about Ben Saunders is how he throws the double jab and steps back. And then he throws the wild right. He goes, that's something Nakafola would do. Nakafoli, who's at Justin Fortune's, he's like 70. He's a boxing dude from Boston. Real fucking crazy. He used to collect for the mob. He's fucking nuts. But he's still a badass motherfucker. He's still down there taking mitts with the big black James Toney. James Toney's down there hitting the mitt. So they got some sass. So please, stop in there. You don't like that. You're going to like Nakafoli. And he likes that because a lot of them, like Fabricio was going there. 3 years ago, Fabricio was going there. And I remember Justin saying to me, if that dude ever gets his hands going, he's unstoppable. Because they were doing jiu-jitsu in there. And I know Justin didn't know anything about jiu-jitsu. But he's like, he's jiu-jitsuing everybody, Joey. Yeah. You know, he's jiu-jitsuing everybody. Because he's from Australia, you know. So he jiu-jitsu's everybody, Joe. He just takes their neck and he pulls their back. And he goes, he took Babalu. He goes, the other crazy Brazilian was there, Babalu. And he took Babalu and he spun him around like nothing. So that's how I know, you know, Justin is good with that shit. And he's right. Look, he goes, if Fabricio ever gets his hands going, he's going to be a champion. He said that fucking 4 years ago. What's up, Lee Syatt, Stone to the Gazelles?
Yeah, I went like this to the Infected Mushroom concert on Thursday.
That's right. Thursday. You fucking, you were periscoping.
I jumped up and down.
You're a bad dude, dog.
That was really fun.
I know. You were periscoping, jumping up, and you took a Star of Debt.
Hell yeah. How could you? It was so cool. Like, the lights were really cool. And then, last night for the fireworks, I had, because fireworks, they're the same every year. So I was like, okay, let me see what this is like. And it was so much better.
Did you have any fireworks yourself? When you went to Balboa Park, that ice cream dad didn't sell you a pack of fucking fireworks.
Oh, no, Jesus Christ.
You couldn't buy some bottle rockets?
No. They're illegal in Mass, too, so I've never, like, had fireworks.
What the fuck is wrong with these people? You have fireworks growing up?
Yeah. Kind of. Not, like... Not like my dad was like, yeah, let's bring out the big guns. Like I said, we didn't have money. So I would go to my best friend's house, and his family would have some shit to blow up. I would like the M80s and stuff, you know. Flailing stuff's cool, but I like to try to, you know, let's just put the M80s in various different objects and see how powerful they are.
A fucking wall. Oh, my God. I used to do some... When I first moved to New York from Cuba, I lived on 89th Street. When I lived on 88th Street, the cops would come around and come out of the car and they would show you pictures of your hand if you play with firecrackers and shit.
Did you guys see what the that idiot did?
In Boston, he lit a firecracker on his head, and his head blew up.
He died instantly.
Wait, what?
Fucking idiot.
Some fucking
This happened moment. Yesterday? Or
the 4th, yeah. 4th? This dude fucking was like, hey, it'll be fun if I light a firework off of my head. And then it instantly wasn't fun because he died. Like, it just blew up his head.
What kind of firework?
I don't know. I can do some research, though.
I'll never forget. They used to sell.
Oh, my God.
They got that on video?
I hope not.
I hope so.
I know. I hope you had a good friend that taped that shit, right?
That's
how faces
Fuck are. Yeah. There's always a good friend. Hold on. Let me get it on the iPhone. We'll tweet this shit.
Oh.
Bam! That motherfucker's head blew up. Now, there used to be a guy that used to come around and sell us a mat were the ones that were all connected that you could light at one shot. A mat. You could buy a fucking mat. In those days, for like $20 a mat. And then you got a gross that came in a package with Chinese wrapping out like a brick. That's when you were badass. That's when you went to Chinatown and you were a fucking badass. Then you bought the cherry bombs that were circular. And then there were smoke bombs that were circular. Sparklers, they didn't count. You bitch hand motherfuckers who had sparklers.
Yeah, that's the only thing I ever had.
Then you had, the tanks with the M80. That's when I lived on 88th Street. And then there were kids that would break the stick off the bottle rocket, and you lit them, and you called those nigger chasers. Fucking hysterical. Hysterical.
What? Why do you call them that?
Because they just go crazy, and they would chase black people. Fucking crazy. I don't know. I didn't invent it, Lee. I'm just informing the country of what they used to call them in New York City in those days.
You'd have to ask, like, hey, where'd you come up with the name?
Why would I? I didn't want to question it. I had black friends. I don't know. I didn't say nothing. That's what they fucking called them. Even black people called them
nigger
chasers.
No, I heard it too.
Nigger chasers when we were kids. That's what they called them. What the fuck?
Did they have a commercial?
What?
Like, it's a name everybody knows. Like, imagine if it
That's
like,
what that was the name of the street was. You took the bottle
but
rocket.
But they wouldn't sell them like that, so it's not like the package was...
You cut the stick off them a little bit, and that's what it became. I'm not going to fucking say it again. I told you 3 times and shit. You're going on my emotions. So you were talking about fear before. Why was it interesting to you? I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, because when you brought it up, man, I wasn't a bully and I didn't look for fights, but I would fight. Like I was a scrappy kid, whether it was to stick up for my friends or someone, you know, wanted to try to bully me, and it wasn't going down. You know, I was in some street fights, and I would have to say those were probably the most. Obviously, I never fought before that, so those were the scariest moments of my time. And I remember really, really in particular after my first like legit street fight. Which ended up getting broken up by, I don't know, like a guy that lived in the neighborhood came out and he was like, hey, you kids, get out of here, blah, blah, blah. Like, but I remember my cardio was like, oh my God, this is a whole different factor. And just the adrenaline dump of your, oh my God, this is real. The heart rate's up, you know, physical damage is real and whatnot. I remember being like, how the hell am I going to get past this? You know, like, because it was absolutely insane. You know, I've never experienced anything like that. The fear and the adrenaline and the heart rate and everything involved was too crazy. And it was Bruce Lee, Tao Jeet Kune Do. He has a spot in the book, if I'm not mistaken, it's under attitude. And he talks about it and he says, I believe it was like, when you start anticipating combat or the fight, and you start feeling the biggest thing, butterflies. You know, like sometimes it's just reaction. If a street fight happens, it happens. But sometimes if there is a little verbal communication leading up to the fight, you're starting to already feel the butterflies, or you got that bullshit, I'll see you after fucking school, bitch. You know, and then you're like, it might be churning for the next couple of periods or classes leading into, oh, okay, after school, it's fucking going down. You know, you're fucking waiting on it. And I was like, how the fuck do you deal with this? And he was like, when you feel the butterflies in your stomach and you feel nauseous or the anticipation of the combat that is about to go down, don't panic from it. Don't be scared of it. Embrace it. It's a good thing. It's your body preparing for competition, battle, you name it. And it rises, it helps your body raise its senses so you're more on point when the actual altercation goes down. And ever since that moment reading that, if I ever feel it, it would bring a smile to my face and I'd be like, yes, it's now. This is the moment, like, that he's speaking of. I'm ready. And you just fucking go with it.
How long have you been fighting?
As in pro?
Yeah.
2004.
How many years before that?
As in what? Street fights?
Training.
Oh,
amateur.
1996 or 7, maybe?
So 18 years. I don't know. Let's just call it 17 years.
Yeah.
You've been experiencing getting hit, reactions, learning shit, you know, walking into knees. I see you have a little thing on your eye.
Yeah.
Walking into knees, walking into elbows. This is how you learn. You know, mm-hmm. This is how you learn to put that hand up. This is why they tell you in the third round, keep it. I told you.
Well, I
told you. Your arm is tired. So is everybody. Glue it to your fucking temple.
If you don't feel it, it's not there.
It's not there. So I've been doing comedy 24 fucking years. God knows before that. I went to prison. I was comic. On my corner, I was always cracking jokes. It was always a circle. You got to be the funniest to even get a word in. You know, Friday night, man, it's a set like any other set. This last Friday, I didn't tell him till yesterday. It was a set like any other set, right? Ben, I've been doing comedy. If I'm, you know, I'm a fighter. If I'm working, I'm fighting. But if I'm not fighting, I still go out 3-4 nights a week. I still go out and do 3 sets, 4 sets for the week. That's my goal. And I go.
That's your sparring.
Yeah, that's my sparring.
Right? Yeah.
And I go to the comedy store. You know, you got to follow Chris D'Elia. You got to follow Rogan. You know, that's the Wolf, Sebastian. You don't know who the fuck you're following down there. Neil Brennan, you know, Sarah Silverman. So I go down there last Thursday night for the storyteller show. And I forget that I can't go up first and throw heat at them. They're not settled for that type of. I opened up with the story about my buddy killing himself with the ice cream cone. He bought the sundae. Steve Banchini, I told it in Vegas. He went to Carvel. This guy was always one of those dudes that, you know, he was kind of disturbed. You knew he was fucked up because he'd always be quoting like devil worship music and shit. You know, you'd be having a conversation, oh, rolling thunder, power and rain. You know, you're like, all right, you know, it's just Steve. You know what I'm saying? But one day this motherfucker went to Carvel, bought like a little sundae, went to Suicide Bridge, ate the sundae, put the cup down, took his glasses off, and jumped off the bridge like nothing happened. No note, no nothing. You know, and people are like, well, what happened? What thing happened? He ran out of fucking, you know? He said, fuck it, right? I told that story. They just stared at me, dog. They just stared at me. So I had nowhere to go. So my main story died. I had a second story, but thank God, I was in the bathroom one night snorting blow with a chick that was just tried to kill herself, and she just got a loony bin, and I asked her how she got out, and as she did the line of coke, she looked at me, and she goes, they let me out, I ain't crazy, and I fucking never forgot that it was a gram, I did a little bit, and she did the whole fucking rest of it and said, I ain't crazy, so I told that story, and that got him, but nothing else, I was dying, and then I had to go in the main room and follow Chris D'Elia, and I just died, Lee, I just died, so I came home, and I'm like, you know what, I don't want to fucking go down there on Friday. I just died too nice. Let's just write it off for the weekend. Let me write some new jokes.
Yeah, you said that morning.
But you know us, bro. I'm going to stay hit. I got hit last night.
Yeah.
In my world, in my comedy world, this is how, in every aspect of my world, I went down there and got beat up last night. They're talking. Right now they're talking. Joey got beat up. Is he going to come down? Nah, he's an old guy. Fuck you. I got down there at 11 o'clock, dog. And I ate a brownie. But I ate the little one. I opened it up like at 8 in the morning and ate the one half, which is 70 milligrams. And then I ate the other one as I was leaving. I go, oh, that's right, the brown. I can't leave it there. What if the ants? I said, fuck it. Boom. I ate that motherfucker. I got gas, and I shot down to Hollywood. I got there. Everybody was there, so I had to wait. Sometimes you get to the Comedy Store, and nobody's there. So they put you right up, and you go home. No, I had to wait. So I went into the back room, and I was just talking to some people. And all of a sudden, an hour flew, and some guy came and got me, Jeff. And he goes, Joey, you're up in 5. I went back there. Ben, it was like, I've been watching The Sopranos with this fucking lunatic lately, just revisiting it, going over it.
Yeah, I got to rewatch it, man.
And he gets those panic attacks, you know. Now, I get anxiety for, like, listen, I eat edibles all day long. So I get, like, 3 anxiety attacks every day for, like, a minute. But I just breathe through them. I already know how to do them. You know, when you eat 500 milligrams or something, it hits you hard at first.
I just did. I just had one because I thought the cops were coming.
Yeah, see. You.
And the cops, I heard the sirens going, and then I heard the door open. I was like, oh, we're going to jail.
Nah, you ain't going to jail. Uncle Joey's here. Ben Saunders here. Nobody's going to jail. We got the back window. We'll destroy you out that window. I've done it where's 1,000 times.
Where's your warrant?
So, Ben Saunders, I walk up the stairs. And something happened. A waitress is coming down, and I moved to one leg, and I held my breath. And when I got to the top of the stairs, I wasn't winded. I just went to catch my breath, and all of a sudden, fucking anxiety set. And I looked at Megan Mooney. What's her name?
I don't know.
Whatever her name was, the writer girl. And I saw, all, it was sold out, and I saw Pauly Shore. And I got overwhelmed, and I looked, and there was one chair right there, like God was in the room with me. This is Friday night. I sat down. Now, this is a room door that I've been going to since 1997. This is it. This is my back end. This is my training facility.
This is past Friday.
Yeah, this is the place where I cut my teeth. I know every nook on that stage. I know what to say this way. I know what to say that way. I know who's watching in the back. I know this room. This is my fucking room in life. Guys, it just fucking blew me away. Now, I'm sitting there, and I get up, and I turn around to look down the stairs to get air, to get fresh air, and oh, my God, now I'm going into the mode where I see blood. Like, if I give blood, I turn around, I put an iPod on, I look the other way. But for some reason, if I feel the needle prick, that's it. My mind takes it from there. Do you understand me? This is a mind game. Your mind fucks with you from time to time. He has a good time, too. You know, just because we smoke pot and drink alcohol, and he's up there recuperating, losing all his happiness, he now wants to have a good time. So the mind, with me in my case, just takes it to a different level, Ben Saunders. And all of a sudden, I just start seeing spots, and if I don't breathe, I'll fucking faint. If I breathe it out, I'm okay. Then I'll go into a cold sweat. Then they'll give me some water. Then I'll lay there for like 5 or 6 minutes, and I'll be fine. This was where I was going, guys. I was going right to the beginning. She's closing up. The light's on her. Ben Saunders, I can't tap out now. I got maybe 2 minutes to recover. Maybe. If she fucks around, maybe I got 2 minutes to recover. I'm looking at the light. The light's what's saving me from not fainting. I'm breathing. I finally say, fuck it. I ain't going to have time to go down the stairs, recover, and come back up. I'm going to stay right here and breathe this out. So I got close to the wall, and I just started breathing into the wall. And some motherfucker comes up to me and goes, hey, Joey. And he hits my side. I'm like, what's happening, dog? And I'm dying. And I can hear him, like, ready to start talking, and I just don't even look at the motherfucker. I just look at the wall, and I'm breathing. And all of a sudden, another guy comes out of the corner and goes, hey, Joey, you know me from this place. How you doing? He goes, where's the Agostino at? And I look at him, I go, do I look like I know where the fuck the Agostino's at? And right away, the piano player's walking up the stairs, and he goes, hey, big boy, you ready to go up? He's a gay guy. I love him to death. I grab him. I go, Jeff, go up to Pauly Shore and tell him he's got to go up next. I can't go up. I'm having an anxiety attack. And I start breathing. And I'm breathing. I see him talking to Pauly Shore. And then he comes back and he goes, well, did you ask Pauly if he even wants to go up? I go, tell him I'm having a fucking anxiety attack. And he's the closest one to the fucking stage. This is going down. I'm going to faint any fucking minute now. I could feel the cold sweat. I could feel that drip going down my neck like I was dehydrating. Thank God I had water. I had a little bit of water. I went right into shock. And from getting mad at Jeff and Pauly Shore, Like, I'm from the school. If you come up to me and go, dog, go, I'm going. I'm not going to ask you why or how many minutes. I'm going to fucking go. That's it. Go. We'll figure it out later. Something's going on with this fucking guy. Not these two lunatics. They start asking me questions and shaking me down. I could see if it was Lee. But this is Paulie Shore. His mother owns the fucking comedy club, Ben. And Ben, I, all of a sudden, looking at the wall, I got so mad at those motherfuckers for asking so many questions. It snapped out of the anxiety attack. Nah, it was a fucking caged animal, Ben. I went up to Paulie Shore. I grabbed him and I grabbed Jeff. I go, fine, I'm going to go up. And right there, she goes, Joey Diaz. Guys, may God be my witness, or tomorrow call in to fucking Punch Drunk Sports as Sam Tripoli. It was, and you know, you never hear me talk like this. It was the set of my life. I yelled for 15. It was like I was so scared to go down there and bomb again. Like, it was so much pressure on me. Like, I just zoned in, and I didn't even realize where I was till the 15-minute mark. So I was talking about the Mexican ice cream truck and how they ring the bell at 2 in the morning. I'm going to go home. And then I go, oh, my God. I'm like, and all of a sudden the light came on. And I'm like, oh, my God, I made it through this shit. And I closed, and I got the fuck out of that dog. And Paulie Shore came up to me, goes, you need to get more anxiety attacks more often. Because I fucking slaughtered it. It was just the fear.
Yeah.
I haven't had that without seeing blood in years. And then I went home, and it hit me this morning. Whenever I used to cut myself, and I used to faint. When I first moved to the Valley, I had two mishaps in that place. I bent over one day to get shoes, and my wife put clothes over this rack. And I cut my head open. I saw the blood, and I'm like, oh. And I ran to the living room, and I put the air conditioner on and took my shirt off. And all of a sudden, I used to have this cat that would... this...
Oh, my God.
This cat... this cat would jump on me. And I love this cat so much, Ben saw this. Anybody else with a squeeze in this cat's head. Because here you are, ready to faint. The fucking beads are sweating. All of a sudden, out of nowhere, I'd be with my eyes closed, just breathing. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, something would grab, land on my chest, and his claws would go into my... And I'd look at him like, Finny, you motherfucker. And I loved him so much. If I didn't love Finny so much, I'll tell you right now on the show, I just would have squished his fucking head one
time. Oh, my God.
But I loved him so much. But for me, getting that pain from his claws...
Snapped you out.
I was like, Finny, you're a fucking genius. Then another time, I fucking cut myself shaving in the shower. Like, I do every fucking week, I cut myself in the shower. But this one time, the water hit it, and the blood dripped on my chest. And dog, my mind just ran away with me. And I had to get out of the shower wet and everything. And I fell on the way out. And all of a sudden, I ran to the couch, put the air on, and that motherfucker jumped on me again like a week later. I was going to kill that. You motherfucker, I got no shirt on. But I love that motherfucker. He's dead now. He's all right. What's he gonna do?
A shame.
I love that.
I was gonna say, he knows at this point.
Yeah,
right?
he knew whenever I was all fucked up. So he would jump on me and put his claws in me so I would take my mind off fainting. I never.
Does blood usually do that to you?
Who?
Your own blood?
Oh my God.
Get you.
When I watched, when BJ Penn fought Joe Daddy Stevens, he cracked his fucking skull. Okay, and I fainted at my house. I went out on my own couch. I went to see The Ultimate Fighter one time with Ralphie May. Joe gave us all tickets. A bunch of comedians were in Vegas. I'm sitting next to Ralphie May. And in between rounds, he busted the guy's... I don't remember the fight. I'm sorry. He busted the guy's eye, and they had the towel on his eye. So it was right there. I mean, it was 10 feet away from where I was sitting. I was, like, in the second row. And I saw the guy throw the towel, and it was just red. Dog, and I just saw the red towel. I couldn't even imagine. My heart went into, and I fainted sitting there. And I fainted on some chick, and the boy she was with was a doctor. She had big tits. I fainted on the tits, and they were like, are you okay? And, I'm like, and they gave me water. And the doctor's like, you're fine. What happened? I go, I can't see blood in that guy's towel. He goes, oh, that towel made me sick, too. Some people get it. So I fainted twice at the... I fainted at Pulp Fiction.
Really?
Yeah, when he sticks the needle in her heart.
Wow.
First time, I fucking went down. I haven't fainted this last two... Yeah, this last time, I had to do 2 days in a row. So when I went to get blood, I didn't faint. But when I went for the heart thing, they fucking put ink in my heart. And that made me fucking all fucked up. makes you break out into sweats and get. But I, you know, the breathing has helped. When I was younger, I didn't know anything about the breathing, so I'd go out. But now you just keep breathing a certain way, and you get you recover, and after a while, you're like, "What the fuck happened?"
Yeah, it's almost a meditation.
And when I first started jiu-jitsu, I used to have the panics on the bottom. I tapped for a long time, and I said, I got discouraged.
Was it like claustrophobic?
Yes, it was very claustrophobic, and as soon as I would hold my breath, and then you're on me, that's it. Oh, my God. And I would eat edibles or smoke dope. I'd listen to Eddie Bravo, and I'd go to fucking jiu-jitsu up here in the valley with the gi, and it's Monday nights at 8 o'clock, so the guy puts you through a half hour. It's called Marcelo Madness. Well, you do 10,000 sit-ups, and he makes you do everything to tire you out. So when he teaches you the technique, he wants you to do the technique while you're tired. So at 8:30 starts the portion part of the class, where he teaches the class till about 9:15. You drill it, and then you spar till 10 o'clock. Mm-hmm. I couldn't fuck, bro. I almost fainted four times. The gi, the T-shirt, I wouldn't even wear a rash guard. I got a rash guard one time. I put it on and almost tapped myself out in my house. Dog. If my wife wasn't home, I would have downed 911. That shit was tighter than fuck. I couldn't get it off. I was panicking. So forget the rash guard. I get a T-shirt from a sponsor. MeUndies. MeUndies has a nice fucking blue long sleeve thin rash guard type deal that's nice. It's a little loose. It gives me a little air. I like my titties to breathe. I don't need that shit fucking choking me out by my own. But you know what, man? I'm like you. I got so scared of going to jiu-jitsu that the fear made me go to jiu-jitsu. And I just pulled guard, and I tapped. And I flew to Vegas with Big John McCarthy, and we were talking on the plane about it. And he goes, I had a guy years ago that would come in and tap and turn purple and run out of the building. And he came one day, and he goes, I'm not going to come no more. And he goes, why? He goes, just keep coming. Please keep coming. He goes, just don't roll. Just do the technique. Keep doing the technique. And he goes, the guy kept coming, guy. He goes, like 8 years later now, the guy's one of my top brown belts. And he teaches the kid classes. He goes, just keep going. Just keep going. And now it's okay. Now I can live with it. You know, now I can live with it. I know a couple of escapes. And now at least I can loosen. I know what I'm doing on the bottom. I just pick him up a little bit and put my knee under there. Something. But at first, man, I would fucking kiss the cats before I went to jiu-jitsu. I wouldn't make my will out. I would get fucking panic attacks. So I stopped with the reefer. You know, before I go to jiu-jitsu, that's why I go to the 11 o'clock class. That's why. I need to go to the early. I can't make it out to the 8 o'clock. That's never going to happen. I am not going to not smoke dope till 8 o'clock. I can't do it. 11, you got me, because I could smoke like at 7. And by the time I get to jiu-jitsu, it's already worn out. But I already got my weed for what I needed. So write a little bit, drink some coffee.
Yeah.
Get the morning started. You know what I'm saying? Look at Ben Saunders. I'm like, what the fuck, Joey?
Nah, man, I mean...
Why are we talking about this, Joey?
In my head, I'm thinking... I almost feel like my favorite word is perseverance, because I don't even care what you do in life, man. Like, what your thing is. You're a comedian. You work in a cubicle. Whatever it is, man. I mean, dealing with trials and tribulations and overcoming it is one of the hardest things anybody can ever do, but it's also the most satisfaction you could ever experience in your life.
Did any part of you, when you were in Bellator for 4 years, consider, like, just retiring? Like four years would be a long time to be, like, that frustrated with what you were.
Yeah, man. I almost went to kickboxing and jits, you know. politics, man. You know, things that I won't get into. Dark things that make you think negatively on many, many factors. It's not what I signed up for, man. I try to live a very positive life. I like to smile a lot. I love to laugh. I love comedians, man. You guys are a great thing in this world, you know. So definitely don't stop that. But yeah, there is definitely. I think there was just. It was really just maybe like three people, but they were like. Three top people in my situation that caused just absolute nonsense, drama, stuff I didn't really sign up for, to the point where it was like, well, I could just say fuck you and go do my own thing over here, man. I would love to do Glory Kickboxing,
you know, Lion Fights, Abu Dhabi, EBI, you name it, man. Like, I have other, I'm just a martial artist. You know, I chose this path. I definitely didn't sign up to have anybody control what my destiny in my life is. And, you know, I never signed up to stay with Bellator for the rest of my career. And if that was my choice, that's my motherfucking choice to make, not theirs. And but once again, the people that were involved in what made things kind of depressing and dark for me no longer work there. So, you know, and considering where I am now in my life, I'm very happy I didn't give up. I'm very happy I just did what I had to do, man. Push through, do what's necessary, and, you know.
9 out of 10, those people go away. Listen, here's the beauty of it, that some people choose the unorthodox way to make a living. And just doing that is tough enough. You know, we're built into a thing into our mind that we have to do a certain thing, get a pension and get a home and build a family. Some motherfuckers wake up one day and say, you know what? I like the fucking the thing of fighting twice a year and picking up a nice little payday, getting a couple fucking sponsors, maybe laying a fucking bet down, maybe crashing a bookie house, whatever the fuck we gotta do, and living my life and training and taking care of my family or taking care of myself and just choosing that. But then you always have people that didn't even go that struggle. They tried it for a couple of years and got out of it for whatever excuse they give you. And now they're in a control position. And this, listen, man, what makes the world go around is that we all don't get along. Can you imagine if we all got together and sang Beatles songs every fucking day and held hands and we went to 7-Eleven with the fucking, with the whatever, you know, and everybody jumped up and down.
No freedom of speech.
No, man, so some people aren't going to like you. And here you are working hard at your dream. And there's always this one motherfucker that just don't dig it. And sometimes you go head to head with that person. You confront that person, which you make it worse now. Now you gave that motherfucker more control. And it's funny that talent always overrides that. Somewhere along the line, you'll find something as a Band-Aid to cure it. And one day this guy will be gone. And there you are. There you are in a position to save them. You know, at one time you couldn't, and now you learned about life. You learned that maybe you were ready, but you weren't ready. And this guy that was fucking with you, he's selling real estate somewhere in Kentucky. He doesn't even matter. He doesn't even matter in life anymore. And here you are fighting, you have a family, you're fighting on national TV. Did you ever think of that, bro? You're in the UFC.
No.
Ben Saunders, still let's get down mind, to the man. Fucking, you know, you're in the UFC, okay? You're in the UFC. You're a UFC fighter. There's kids leaving right now a job. It's 10 to 5 right now. There's guys leaving a job somewhere digging a trench, going to some fucking gym to get beat up with a dream to fight in the UFC. And there you are, you know.
I never forget where I came from, man. I if it ever sways away where I'm like ever thinking negative about what I've accomplished or where I am in my life, it just takes a split second for me to remember working at McDonald's, working at Burger King, working real shit jobs. I was a hardwood stair carpenter, waking up at 3 a.m. to be there at 6 a.m. to work the most rugged, hardcore, destroying all my joints in my body, to then leave there at 2:30 p.m. to go train and stay at my gym from 4:30 to I think 8:30 at night, to go home, hopefully pass out by 11, and do that again, all over again, all over again. And that was probably the most physically and mentally just really miserable time, because it was just, I'm killing my body. My body is necessary for me to succeed in the goal of where I want to go. But this job's fucking deteriorating. I'm feeling arthritis in my wrists and my hands. These are supposed to be your babies. You know, boxers, they talk all day long. You need to protect your hands, man. Without your hands, what good are they? You know, and thank God, you know, eventually I ended up getting like a bar backing job. I got to work more nights. They worked around my schedule. the bar industry definitely was a perfect industry for me. I didn't need to drink. I didn't like to drink, but those motherfuckers like to drink and tip and talk. And it physically didn't fucking do goddamn thing, you know, on my body. You know, there's a lot of boring waiting around sometimes, but I definitely can easily just look back to the hard times. Fuck, man, one time, you know, I was one of the FedEx guys in the back of a truck doing Tetris, where they would just shoot these boxes down and you have to Tetris up, you know, rows and rows of all these packages. Sometimes the package looked, you know, as small as a ball and weighed 150 pounds, and you're almost breaking your back because you're not even realizing how fucking heavy it was, and you didn't bend over properly to pick that shit up. And it's like 230 degrees in the back of the fucking thing, and you're fucking sweating your ass off, and you're going home and your back hurts and everything fucking hurts, and then your car breaks down and you gotta fucking walk like 8 to 10 miles to fucking get home because you don't have a phone and you don't fucking have anybody's number to even call, and then you're gonna get fucking evicted from your apartment because you no longer have a job, because you no longer have a car to fucking get to your job, and then your family, when you go to them for help, tells you, what are you doing with your life, because you're not making a goddamn cent with this fucking career you're talking about with fighting and whatnot. So then you fucking disown your family and fucking do what you got to do to get by and fucking finally make it happen, and you make it on live television, and then the world turns. Everyone's like, holy shit, you made it. You did it.
Can we borrow $100?
I'll think about it.
It's amazing that you go out. I never forget. On the drives to gigs in my hotel room, I think about nights in Riverton, Wyoming, and, you know, being at a bus station. There's a bus station right here in Magnolia, you know, Lee.
Yeah.
And if you go to NoHo Diner at night, you'll see the people that have to land there like at midnight and wait till 6.
Yeah.
And they just sit there. That was me. On the road 12, 15 years ago, I would fuck that to save a plane ticket. I would spend the night at the bus station outside. I'd bring 2 joints and a Walkman. Fuck yeah, 6 o'clock. Get on that bus to whatever. Sleep in the condo when I got there and did comedy. Took a shower. Oh, my God. That's what you think about, and that's where you gain your strength from. You know, you're like, Jesus, I did that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I started hanging out with D'Agostino. I started feeling bad for him. And one day I'm like, fuck him. He's got to get a day job, and he's got to go out every night and do comedy. You know, and that's how you become a comedian. Everybody, when you go on the road, you work with these kids. They get $500 a week for 5 shows and no hotel. So they got to go on Wikipedia, whatever the fuck that is, and get some hotel for $48 a night in a bed that somebody got stabbed in last week. The room ain't painted. There's one light bulb that's out. There's no hot water. And they got to drive 50 miles. I mean, I talk to these kids, and they tell me their fucking journeys. And for a minute, I feel bad. And then I could go, no, I did the same thing like you motherfuckers, you know. I didn't Wikipedia my destination. I just slept at the fucking bus station to save $44. You wake up, you get a fucking horrible bagel, and you get a cab, and some days you fucking
pinch nerve in your neck.
Yeah, some days you make a score, and some days you don't. I remember doing Michigan, and the guy would only give me a hotel from Friday to Sunday at lunchtime. And the rest of the week, what am I going to do, come home? No, I just got another hotel room, so I'd find like a Motel 6 in fucking hell for $24.99 from Tuesday to Thursday. Are you fucking kidding me? And I'd eat Subway sandwiches, the veggie and cheese, like a motherfucker. This is when they were first getting the horse meat with the regular fucking white bread. They didn't have no wheat bread. They had white bread. That's it. And it all tasted like formaldehyde.
Might have actually been more expensive back then.
Yeah.
Right? Because they didn't have those deals.
The veggie and cheese was still $3. I ate a ton of those. Going on the road with a Datsun B210. Nobody even knows what a Datsun is. Nobody in this, both of these don't know what a fucking Datsun B210 is. A 4-door with a hanger pole in the back so I could hang my suits and shit. Jumper cables, antifreeze, a radiator repair, a football, a basketball, fucking soap, shampoo, I mean, you know, you named it. That was my job. I was a comedian on the road, Ben Saunders. That's what you do. And you wait every week to call in, and they'll tell you where you're going. Some weeks you go to Nebraska. Some weeks you go to the Idaho Run. Some weeks you do Idaho Run 2. Some weeks you do Winnemucca, Nebraska. You know what Winnemucca, Nevada is?
No.
You know what Winnemucca, Nevada is? No. Fuck no. Nobody fucking knows. No. I've been there. All right, cockfuckers. For a week straight.
So you're saying it was amazing.
It's amazing and pathetic at the same time. But I did it. And nobody could ever take that away from me. They could even look it up. The IRS could call and go, did Joey Diaz work there on these dates? Yeah, that fat fuck was here. He killed us on the shrimp. And he destroyed our bathroom. He took our plunger. He took so many shits, he broke the plunger. Once you break the fucking plunger, that's when you know it's fucking all over and shit. What are your plans, my brother? Talk to me.
Is in tonight?
No.
Doing kickboxing with July, Anthony Hardon.
July 23rd. You're fighting again.
July 25th.
Okay, you're fighting again.
Yeah, yeah. Kenny Robertson, you know, real tough guy. NCAA Division I wrestler. Went to the same college as Matt Hughes. You know, used that wrestling and really worked his jiu-jitsu game. So he's got a real... real tight jiu-jitsu game. His stand-up is a little, you know, it's on its way. And at the end of the day, man, he from all the fights I've seen, he brings it. You know, he's gonna he loves the scramble, he loves the takedowns, and he's tough as hell. He'll take shots to give shots. So you know, I'm expecting the war. You know, I'm never taking anyone lightly. If it turns out better than, you know, a 3-round war in my favor, hell, that's great. But, you know, I'm not going to get caught sleeping, thinking, oh, I got this guy standing. I got this guy on the ground. What is he going to do? You know, I'd rather just say I'm going to do everything in my power to be prepared. And let's see if those stars align.
What do you think about that, Lee Syatt?
I think we need you for the t-shirt guy. You should come with us.
All day, every day, man.
Let me give some shout-outs real quick. David Dimas, Sandman, Don Wrangle, Bill Brasky, Alex Hidalgo, Victor Villarreal, Curtis, K-Win, and Nick Pritchett. You know I love you cocksuckers. I'm going to be at the Atlanta Improv this Thursday through Saturday. And I'm going to be in Chicago the same weekend as my main man here from the 23rd to the 25th at Zany's downtown in
yes, sir.
South Valley. Lee, what's going on in your world, Cocklick? Everything all right? You're looking good, dog.
Thanks, bud. Right now I'm just having a little bit of a panic attack. But
coasted.
Okay. But no, I don't know. What am I doing? Oh, I'm going to San Francisco this weekend with Paula.
Okay. You leaving Friday?
Yeah.
Friday morning. Look at you. You driving?
Yeah.
Look at you up the coast.
Not really, because they said that it takes like 2 days. So,
well, what do you got to do? You got nothing to do.
Well, that's the whole trip, though.
That's perfect. You pull over, give a little stomach, get juice, and you keep driving. You get a taco for a dollar. You cancel the room, you pocket the money. Nobody knows nothing. You know what I'm saying? You gotta work it correctly. I gotta fucking hold your hand on these scams. Don't you want to make love to her in the car like a fucking savage? Pull over. Fuck the 40 for the hotel. Right there. You keep driving. It's going to take you 2 days. By the time you get to San Francisco, you turn around. By that time, you wore that ass out. You just do 6 hours straight. You know what I'm saying?
Keep it interesting.
Fucking Lee. I got to fucking tell you this shit. You're a sexual fucking magneto. What's the problem? You take on it? Anyway. Let's give a shout out to my sponsors, these bad motherfuckers on it. Total Human Optimization, you know what I'm saying? If they can't do it for you, fucking shoot yourself. Right here, it starts with the complete Earth Grown Nootropic Alpha Brain. 100% money back guarantee. They don't even want the product back. You following me? That's how strong they are. You take fucking Alpha Brain, you try it for 30 days, this motherfucker will work for you. You'll think clearer, you'll get some focus. You have some clarity. You have some fucking nightmares for 2 weeks. But that's fine. When was the last time you paid for a fucking nightmare? That's like eating a stripper's asshole for $100. You know what I'm saying? Same difference. It's a nootropic with all the goodies. Anyway, Alpha Brain. New mood. They got the 90-pound kettlebell, the new one. I mean, these motherfuckers don't stop. The tea oil for the fucking, with the coconut for the coffee in the morning, with some nice fats. They don't fucking stop over there, Onnit. But don't hear it from me. I don't even know what the fuck I'm talking about. Go to Onnit.com right now. Look at the pay. Look at the supplements. I can't help you with the weights and shit, but take a look at them anyway. They got some fantastic stuff. Anything in the supplement department, even the coffee, I'll get you 10% off. At the end, once you ring everything up, bam, you press in.
Church.
Boom, in the box, C-H-U-R-C-H, and you get 10% off the fucking order. Who's better than me, huh? Who's better than you, cocksucker? And they have the Stay On It program. So if you want to stay on it, you just call them up, give them your credit card. Boom, it comes to your house every month on the 1st. Give them a shout. Also, Hitty Sigs, the fucking best. They're still throwing heat over there. 5 for $50. You get yourself 5 fucking, get 3 cigars, and you get the gamut on the other ones. 24, 16, and fucking go right for 8. Eliminate 0. By that time, you'll be smoke free. Where are you going to smoke one of these with nothing in it? Get 2 cigars. Save one for Atlantic Save one for Atlantic City, and save one for fucking New Year's Eve. That's how the real pimps do it. Get a 24, a 16, and an 8. Don't get the 0. Trust me. Get 5 for $50. Go to HittySigs.com and press in.
Joey's Church.
Joey's Church, cocksucker. And get what?
5 for 50.
5 for 50. 1,200. Hitty Sig. The best fucking Hitty Sig on the market. 1,200 guaranteed puffs. Tastes better. Lasts longer. You understand me? You go to one of these 7-Elevens or one of these places, you got to change the fucking oil every 2 weeks. It gets on your paperwork. If not, you got to go over to this other fucking place and deal with them and get these things that cost 10 bucks and you smoke them in 2 hours. Not with the Hitty Sigs. 1,200. Guaranteed fucking puffs. You understand me? So go to HittySigs.com and press in.
Joey's Church.
Boom! And get 5 for 50. Number 3, NailedInLife.com. Who's better than these fucking savages? They were here a couple weeks ago. They came up with cases. If these guys, listen, if you're into dabbing, go to NailedInLife.com, okay? They got the vapor pen. They got bazookas. They got pens. They got the sticks to put the fucking jammy jimmy all into your fucking lungs. They got everything. David and Peter don't fuck around. They're up there throwing heat. Go to NailedItLife.com, a.k.a. Los Gumis Hermanos, a.k.a. White Chocolate Heat. 250 milligrams of fucking debt in those little chocolate bars. They got orcata with cinnamon. What else they got? Rice pudding, strawberry cream, 250 milligrams of hash oil. You understand me? Well, anyway, go to fucking NailedItLife.com right now and see it. The beautiful selection of stuff they have. But the most important, what are you laughing about, is the vapor pen. One of the best vapor pen in the market. 100% guarantee. 20% off your first order. So they go for 50. So what do they get it for, Lee?
Leave for 40 when you use code word Joey Diaz.
Boom! Joey Diaz. So there you go. Nailed It Life, a.k.a. Los Gumis Hermanos. You got Hitty Sigs. And you got Onnit.com right there. And a shout out to Iron Dragon. Don't forget, 2 free movies. Go there. Kung Fu All the Fucking Way, right? That's the name of my Christmas movie. Kung Fu All the Way. What do you think about that one, Hanukkah boy?
I like it. I'm watching.
Ben Saunders, thank you very much for coming on and taking time off from training. Good luck on the 25th.
No, thank you guys for having me.
You're on the fucking highway to fucking the championship. I have a feeling, man. You got a certain look in your eye.
Try to ride this wave as long as I can. I definitely use the Onnit stuff too. Shroom Tech Sport, T Plus.
Tremendous Shroom
Tech. Battle ropes.
I can't do no battle ropes. Last time I had my parole, I can't have no ropes around me. You know what I'm saying? What the fuck, Lee? What are you laughing about?
I don't know what you did with the ropes.
We kidnapped them. We tied them up, so they don't want me with no ropes. I can't even hang out with Boy Scouts on rope day. Close this fucking show up, Lee. I got shit to do, cocksucker.
Okay. This show is brought to you by Onnit.com. Use code word CHURCH to get 10% off all the great optimization products like Alpha Brain, New Mood, Shroom Tech Immune, Shroom Tech Sport. The show is also brought to you by NailTheLife.com/Los Gumis Hermanos.com. Use code word Joey Diaz to get 20% off the premier vapor pen on the market for all the oil and wax smokers. And go to HitE6.com and use code word Joey's Church to get 5 Hit E6 for $50.